Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. This morning is Sunday, October 8th, 2017. And this morning, our morning prayer will be read by Lauren.
Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue and pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then miscellaneous writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind as when the earth was without form and mind spake and form appeared. Our subject today, before I continue, who would like to volunteer for reading the prayer for next Sunday? Otherwise, I will select you.
I can do it.
Oh, okay, Dale?
Okay.
And Shardy, you'll be the next week after. Thank you. Okay, our subject today, are sin, disease, and death real? Golden Text, Psalm 34. I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. One thing we are going to work on today is to, with each one of us, eliminate this sense of fear. You know, fear is behind everything. Hate.
That's wrong.
Yeah, that's wrong. Yes, thank you. Everything that's wrong. So, very important that we confront it, face it, and realize its powerlessness and its nothingness. In the lesson in Romans, it says, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is but one power. For there is no power but of God. So, as I wrote on the forum in Mrs. Eddy's home, they watch every morning, from 9 to 10, was to handle fear and to establish the all power of God. In the blue book, on page 96, Mrs. Eddy says, the first commandment forbids us to believe in a power apart from God. Think about that. Because what is the source of fear?
Believing in another power other than God.
That's it. And by doing so, as we've talked about, you become a Satan worshiper. You're believing in another power other than God Almighty. So I would suggest, encourage all of you to work every morning, if you can, if you have that time or any time you have, to establish the allness of God, the nothingness of error, and to wipe out any sense of fear in your thought before you start your day. It's a wonderful way to start the day and to keep the day going.
So that's our assignment for
yes.
this week.
For this week and for the rest of your...
The rest of your earthly life. The
rest of your earthly life, yes. And as I said, I thought Jeffrey put it so well in his testimony that he sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered him from all his fears. And Jeffrey, you worked on it all the time, didn't you? And you still are working.
Yeah.
many times a day.
Yes.
Not just one.
Yes.
Because the suggestions do come, don't they? That maybe God isn't right here, right now, taking care of me. Or maybe there is power in evil, and maybe it does have its source in whatever. I mean, there's a lot of weird beliefs that are quite common. That God knows evil. That he is a wrathful God sometimes.
And to our physical senses, it would certainly appear that there is evil. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Something to be
afraid of. Yes, when you feel the turmoil in the world and the hurricanes and the nature, old upheaval, yes, it's very easy to believe that God is not present amid the chaos.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we had that beautiful watch that Carol wrote Thursday about to stand unimpressed amid the jarring testimony of the senses, that's science and health, and to know that only good reigns is tremendous power. And we must do that because whatever appears to be not good is not true, and it is not of God.
And that is for each one of us to prove for ourselves. That's why we have this lesson twice a year.
And if we prove it for ourselves, we are proving it also for the world. The responsive reading, you know, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness.
I love what it says, for I am with thee.
Yes. I have suggested to some of you that you memorize this and keep it by your bedside. Keep it with you in your pocket. Always reminding yourself that God is with you. Don't be dismayed.
I think the whole lesson this week is just wonderful. This is one of those lessons that are so inspiring, and one of them, speaking for myself, I'm going to keep and continue to go back to it, because everything to the selections of the Bible and the ones of science and health are absolutely wonderful. So whoever wrote it, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, it's no coincidence that you're that our practitioner and Mary wrote it.
Well, thank you. Gary told his tale. So. Okay, and then remember this: behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing, and they that strive with thee shall perish. And that includes the negative suggestions that bombard you. Whatever strives against you shall perish. And this is a treatment for our nation, and for every nation. But at the moment, I'm speaking about our nation, because the fact we've had these hurricanes, the attack in Las Vegas, this is no coincidence. It's not just a random happening. It's an attack against us. And God said he will take care of it, and we need to know it. I wanted to mention, because yesterday in our Bible study, which I was so grateful for, but we were talking about the pure in heart. And all of you should be familiar with this Dixon letter. It's often on our carousel, if not always. Jeremy likes it too. But I'm going to read from it now, because it's about what we're dealing with in our nation and in our individual lives. This is, it doesn't have a page number, but anyway, only the pure in heart and purpose and the honest can really withstand the swollen dragon of these days. With self-will, greed, hypocrisy in one's heart, one cannot be free from those mental qualities from without. Such as these are easy tools for the devil. It is the lamb that slays the wolf. It is the innocence and honesty and goodwill toward men that detect, check, and destroy the hypocrisy and lust that would swallow up the Christ in this age. However, the lamb can never be slain, for it is spiritual and real. Animal magnetism will finally disappear from the face of the earth, for it is not real and it has no true power, because the Christ was never crucified. Christian Science can never be destroyed. It is destined to rule the world. Animal magnetism may delay the inevitable effect of the second coming of the Christ, but it can never prevent it from fulfilling finally the destiny of destroying animal magnetism. The time of this fulfilling depends upon Christian Scientists. It goes on, but it is excellent, and it corresponds to what we were talking about yesterday, the importance of being pure in heart. Have a clean slate. Have a free feeling that there's nothing in you that you need to hide. You've let it all out. You've let God, you've repented of anything you've done wrong. You keep your slate clean on a daily basis. And so animal magnetism cannot touch you. Now,
it's quite an invitation, isn't it? I mean, we can ask ourselves, do we want to be part of the progress for humanity? Do we want to be helpful in destroying animal magnetism? Or are we going to be part of the problem? Be asleep to it. Be selfish.
Allow another 1900 years of darkness.
Exactly. Exactly.
And when you take this proactive approach, you are handling fear. It won't even be able to get to you because you've already attacked it, okay? You're already on the offensive. Be on the offensive. There's a wonderful quote that I have given to you before, but it is extremely important, and it's also in the Blue Book about this. It's on page 139. Mrs. Eddy says, "Do we not all understand cowardice never conquers? To get rid of temptation of any sort or to get out of a difficulty, we are not passive and let the wrong rule the right, but we struggle and thus conquer. We should not avoid the things that hurt us, but repeat them and meet them as their superior. Disease is a coward that leaves when you are not afraid of it." So, be on the offensive. Cowardice never conquers. If you've got any fear in your thought, face it. With the omnipotence and all power of God. Please.
Isaiah 41, this is God's promise, isn't it? He's making a promise to us.
He is.
We don't have to do all the heavy lifting, do we? And I notice, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed." The same thing is said in Joshua earlier in the Old Testament. The book of Joshua says here, verse 9, "Have not I another promise? Have not I commanded thee? Be strong, of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest." Joshua 9. And here it is again, Isaiah 41.
Yes.
Yeah, you would think that perhaps it's maybe one of the laws of the universe, huh?
It is, if you respect it enough.
Well, that's just it. God is with us because there is nothing else with us. The question is, do we acknowledge it? Do we respect it? Do we let him govern our lives? Or do we believe that there's some other mind that we are subject to?
I'd given a testimony once, some time ago, but I used to be, you know, so timid, so afraid, it was hard for me even to leave the house. And I worked with that Isaiah 41. I did what I'm suggesting others do, where I kept it by my bedside. I kept it in my pocket at first. I worked with it all the time. And one time we were going as a church group to this theater in New York, which maybe to most people wouldn't seem like a big deal, but to me, that was kind of the last thing I wanted to do. So I worked with that statement, and I would not let any other thought come to me than that God was going to be with you. He was going to hold my hand. He'd be right there. I didn't have anything to fear. And I had a wonderful time. I ended up my ticket. I had an aisle seat. That meant a lot to me. I wasn't stuck in the middle of hundreds of people. Anyway, I proved it. As we talked about yesterday, I could put next to that verse, T&P, tried and proved. Tried and proved. So
I think the key is that it absolutely has to be done with God, because I was such a fearful child, and then I handled it, or so I thought, and that really fooled me, because the only way I knew how to handle it was on a material basis, and that is not handling it at all, because I just figured out finally recently here that it is a huge problem of latent things that are hidden from my childhood, but they're hidden because I thought I had gotten rid of them because I was using material means. And now I can work through God, and what a difference that's making.
Yes, because otherwise it's just human will.
And Mrs. Eddy talks about the difference between animal courage and moral courage, doesn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, the animal courage is the human will that just sort of sucks it up and goes right ahead without any moral compass. But moral courage is the courage that you obtain by knowing that you are obedient to God. One of the definitions of fear that we learned early on from Mrs. Devins is disobedience to God's law. Why would you ever be fearful if you were in complete and full obedience to God's law and confident in that law?
Then you would feel the closeness. You would feel there's a power and presence here now, which gives the comfort.
Exactly. And that's the moral courage that overcomes fear.
Gary touched on earlier in the lesson that the science of mental practice is susceptible of no misuse. Selfishness does not appear in the practice of truth or Christian Science. And Linda wrote about that on the forum. And what were you saying? You don't have to read it.
I don't remember what I said, but I realized that the reason I couldn't practice Christian Science before because I was trying to have specific outcomes in mind, praying for them, rather than doing God's will and be obedient. And that it was a form of selfishness. And she says right there, you can't practice Christian Science if you're selfish. So that was so shocking to see that.
And selfishness has a lot to do with fear. You know, the reason I was so fearful was because I was always thinking about myself. What was going to happen to me, this, that, or the next thing was me, myself, and I. So that's why, as a scientist, you can't be selfish. You will find if you're thinking of others, your fear will go because of something else, another main point. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear. So what does that mean?
Well, think about, somebody once said that love and fear cannot exist in the same consciousness at the same time. If your heart is full of love, I mean, just godly love, you're too busy doing God's work to be afraid of anything.
Yeah, you cannot really be loving the truth, loving others, you know, working, whatever comes up, thinking of it as an opportunity to work to impact the world thought, you know, thinking rightly and doing rightly, and then be so fearful. I found that out.
Yes. And any good worker will discover that for themselves.
For me, it was also finding out what selfishness was, because I thought I was so unselfish because I was always giving, giving, giving to everybody. But really what I found out was it was because of my fears, the things I wouldn't face because I wouldn't want to make people happy or see them sad or suffer, and it was godless because it was about me and myself rather than about what God wanted. So that was a big deal when I came here and found out.
That's a very important point. You know, I used to have a practitioner ask me, what is driving you? You need to ask yourself, what is driving you? Is it fear? Are you rushing around smartly, accomplishing much because of fear? That's a quote from Mrs. Eddy. What is driving you? Is it will? Very often it is fear, fear that you won't have enough, fear that you won't be loved, fear of this, fear of that. You've got to come to terms with that. Because if that is driving you, you've got to get out of the driver's seat and let God sit in the driver's seat. You be the passenger.
Yeah, otherwise you don't know what direction you're going in.
And you get blown about all the place.
Yeah, you're going to get blown around with the wind and... But if God is driving your vehicle, whatever, your life, and if you're a faithful, you know, passenger, then things work out.
I find it very hard sometimes to be the passenger. And my instinct is usually to like, oh, I can do that, or let me do that, or I have to do that. And I have to constantly remind myself. I find it difficult at times, I have to say.
I don't know anybody who doesn't find it difficult at times. That is why we have to constantly, constantly be prepared to let pride be burned out. That is why it is so essential to have the humility of Christ, to give everything to God. And like you said, that's not an easy thing to do, but it's definitely a worthwhile project, because in total humility is the strength that overcomes all fear.
Try to always remember how bad it was when I was driving.
that's what I do, too. I remember how bad it was. That's why, lest we forget, that's why we have our testimony meeting, to remind ourselves how bad it was when we were in the driver's seat and how terrifying it is, too, because you know you're not capable of it. I can of my own self do nothing. So
she said, Mrs. Eddy said, let love be at the helm of your thought. I love that.
And also, thank you, Florence, the rule for motives and acts, neither animosity nor mere personal attachment should impel the motives and acts of members of the Mother Church. So, again, what is driving you? Is it animosity?
Or
personal attachment? Watch what your motive is. If your motive isn't love, then just stop everything that you're doing. Forget about it. Stop. Because whatever you're doing is doomed for failure anyway. So just stop until you get your peace and a sense of love in your heart. And then take up the work again. And you have to keep doing that all day, and you keep doing it all day.
If you work at it, it'll become more and more natural. And over time, it'll become easier. Although you continue to have to watch. Because the human mind will try to take it from one way or another.
You know, it's interesting in hearing a little bit about what happened. I mean, it's any time there's some kind of an attack, like the one we had in Las Vegas, the first responders are trained to do what?
Run towards the problem. They go right in.
Thank you. They run towards the danger. Would you be willing to do that? While everyone else is running the opposite direction. They run toward the danger. Cowardice never conquers. And because they do that, tremendous things happen. They save lives. Wonderful things happen. Quite a sobering question to ask yourself. But what motivates them instead of fear, what is motivating them?
Love.
They forget themselves and they only want to help.
And so the love makes them not afraid to go forward.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, when David was challenged by Goliath, what did he do?
He ran right toward him.
He ran toward him.
And going back to that tried and proved thing, he only used what he had proven.
He did?
Yes.
He did? He did put down all that heavy armor, tried and proved, and he had such faith. It's what Jeffrey was saying, in God's protection. He knew they were promises. He knew it. He didn't have any doubt that God would be there for him. He just knew it. That is your armor, protection, love.
And he had proven it several times already.
He had. So if you are driven by fear, think about these things we've just talked about and learn to love more, learn to forget self. And working and laboring for mankind, you'll find great relief from it if you do that, because it's Emmanuel, God with us, when you are doing that. Again, whatever holds human thought in line with unself-love receives what?
Directly the divine power.
Directly the divine power.
And we, as Christian Scientists, have enrolled in an army, haven't we?
Yes.
I mean, Mrs. Eddy describes it. And what is the enemy that we have to be the first responders against?
Our own thought, self.
No.
Animal
magnetism. Thank you. False beliefs, masquerading as powerful, masquerading sometimes as good, masquerading in whatever way it will masquerade in order for you to buy it. And as Christian Scientists, we learn to see through it, to sense the danger, and run towards it. And by doing that, we do more good for mankind than anything else we could ever do.
And she assures us here in page 113 of Miscellaneous Writings, she says, divine love is our hope, our strength, and shield. We have nothing to fear when love is at the helm of thought, but everything to enjoy on earth and in heaven.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we have these visitors today, so I wanted Ted to tell us a little bit about their group in Toronto.
Well, it's a small, tightly knit group, and it started how many years ago? About 8 years ago, as a lesson reading group. At that time, the lesson from Boston, and a couple of times I tried to dismantle it, but it get back together by itself. And at a certain point we found that people getting asleep from the lessons and not getting any spiritual benefit. We tried to shorten them to by storing some not significant portions, but it didn't work. And then we tried the all-time lessons, Mrs. Eddy Times lessons. And they were good and very strong and powerful, but people were somewhat scared of them, so we quit those lessons too. And then I found some kind of lessons other than the printed by Mother Church lessons, and we tried those lessons, and they were short and sharp, and they pierced the hearts like a sword. And all of a sudden, everybody woke up. And lessons became fruitful and healings increased. So last year we decided to check who are these people making those lessons. And we came here and found the playing field.
Thank you. Telling him about the word playing field and about our church. So, yeah, I mean, isn't that wonderful to hear? Our lessons woke them up. They were piercing. Which is what a lesson should be. And I mean, when we started writing lessons many years ago, we did it because the same problem. On Wednesdays, everyone was alive and awake and listening to the readings and the testimonies. But Sunday, everyone was either falling asleep or getting headaches.
Reading the Boston lesson.
Reading the Boston lesson. Okay, and yes, it is science and health in the Bible, but if the thought behind it is not pure, then if you're not handling that thought, you will come under it. So we begin writing our own lessons. Thank you. That was very encouraging to hear that. And they have a group of, what, six or seven or more?
Yeah, true story.
And they, yes, and they listen. And now they translate our lesson into Russian, right?
Well, it's not the translations. We're just substituting for the Russian part and we read it.
And they listen to our roundtable and our Bible study. They listen to the roundtable live on their computer every Sunday.
Oh, that's nice.
It is. You know, there's here we only hear certain voices and all of you on the teleconference, which I'm very, very grateful for. But there are many others who are listening on the computer and, what, SoundCloud and
YouTube,
which I'm also very, very grateful for, but we don't hear them, but they're there listening. And so hello to you all. We're so glad you're with us. He, and Ted also told me this morning that people who aren't even interested in church are beginning to listen to our...
Right, I had several patients from the United States who quit the church and not go into the church long time, and they still listen to this. Roundtables and
wonderful, so grateful. So word is spreading and getting out, and we just keep praying and working. He also said something very interesting about, well, he's come from a communist country. What did you say about the...
Well, lately when I learned about the malicious animal magnetism and how it works, like how it's mesmerizing the people, which these days is called hypnotism, right? It's an ancient word, mesmerism. I realized that most of the communist meetings, which were plenty, they would do them regularly. They were designed exactly to do the same, to put people asleep. So about 15 minutes from the lecture to start reading pre-approved text, people would fall asleep deeply until the end of the lecture.
Form of mesmerism.
Now I realize it was a form. It was a form of mesmerism. Now it's gone mostly. But don't be so naive. Communism is not gone. It just moved to different countries, particularly in the United States and Canada.
Yeah, he said it's left Russia. It's come to the United States. It has. And that's why we have to be sharp and piercing and awake. So we're not mesmerized, and if you don't think the organization is not mesmerized, you think again. So, in order to do this work, we have to stay awake. And the reason, well, in the Communist Manifesto, which we years ago studied somewhat, but it said it would take over our country not by force, but how?
From within.
From within. And one of its prime targets is what?
You.
You.
Okay,
yeah.
Youth.
Oh, youth. Oh,
youth.
Yes, youth.
Right.
Okay, yeah. Youth.
Right,
okay,
corrupting
yes.
the youth.
Yes, corrupting the youth.
And eliminating as much as possible religion.
And particularly?
Specifically, Christian Science.
Because if you are a real working Christian Scientist, what does that mean?
You're awake and alert.
You can't be mesmerized that way.
And
correct.
You cannot be mesmerized that way.
I remember also when I was younger, I also came from a communist country, and we'd be waken up by these. There was a school nearby, and they had waken up in the morning by these military hymns, and they were over and over and over again. And to this day, I remember a lot of those hymns. I mean, I will wake up and just hear that, and it usually was a catchy tune, or it was something that just rhymed, and it was very easy to remember. So, yes, they use a lot that kind of indoctrination by either music, hymns, or... military hymns, or by readings. We were in school also told to read the Communist Manifesto, and I remember reading it. And like I said, a lot of the hymns, I still close my eyes and it will just pop into my head.
Thank you. Now, we're talking about communism, but of course there are other avenues for this type of hypnotism. Which we've talked about, it certainly is in the Dixon letter, esoteric magic and Roman Catholicism. Our dear Melissa in Australia had written a very tough watch on a whole list of things that to be handled, to know the nothingness of it. Certainly our media, our television, our Hollywood, they're forms of mesmerism. And if you don't think so, you better think again.
And wake up.
Can't just sit and idly look at some of these things and think you will be exempt from becoming mesmerized by it. And then it's like this big dream going on. And the more and more people are seeing it, mesmerized by it, the bigger the dream seems to be, the more power it seems to have. But remember, it's always a dream. Always a dream. That's how we can handle it.
And that's why Christian Science is at war with the senses. I mean, I remember when I first came to this church, and Mrs. Evans would remind us that we're in this warfare. And I remember cringing at the, every time she mentioned it, because I didn't want to be in a warfare. I wanted everything to be nice and, you know, comfy, cozy, and diplomatic and stuff like that. But after a while, you know, where does it get you? You know, how does it work out for you?
From the dream.
You know? So once I woke, you know, one morning I woke up and I said, okay, this is a war. I better, you know, I better get ready for it and be ready for it. And once I accepted that there is a warfare going on here, then my life changed. I wasn't quite so sympathetic to stuff that was wrong. I wasn't quite so easily mesmerized. And started to become useful. And things just kind of fell into place. I started to be more of a passenger in this vehicle. and then everything started to make sense. And it's still making sense.
Thank you, Gary, for that, because I've also felt the same way. Why do I have to struggle so much? Why can't it be more peaceful? And why do I have to overcome this and that, et cetera? But that in itself is the mesmerism. I thank you for that. I really needed that.
Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I also needed to hear that, too. You know, when I go into these meetings at work and listen to all this negativity and all this physical symptoms and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Yeah, we can't, you know, we can't ignore what's around us, but we are put in those positions because we are capable of dealing with them. We are capable of overcoming the false beliefs that come at us. God doesn't, you know, put us in positions where we have problems without giving us the solution also.
And in the lesson in Science and Health, it says, speak the truth to every form of error. That's our job. So if you're in a meeting with all this kind of stuff going on, you've got to mentally speak the truth to it. Bring your arsenal with you. Have your little piece of paper with truths in it and address it, just like David in with his slingshot. You hit it hard and fast, knowing it's not the truth. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and as I learned yesterday, don't stop when the meeting's over. Keep going.
Yeah.
Right on with the truth. Don't stop.
Yeah, because the appearance may not always change so quickly. You don't want to let yourself get discouraged, because that's a mesmerism.
Yeah, and, you know, Mrs. Eddy answers that question in prose work somewhere, but, you know, well, why are we in this state of existence anyway? Why do we have to struggle? She says, who says we are? and Janet just said that's part of the mesmerism, that you think that. Who says you are? Did God say you are? I thought, what a wonderful answer.
Well, and is there any other answer? Did God make this mesmeric state that we appeared to be in, of having to struggle
struggling
and so forth?
No.
I didn't make it.
Who made it?
It's all self-inflicted.
Nobody made it.
Nothing need nothing.
It is a pure illusion. That is the point, and that is our freedom. Because we have the opportunity to prove it if we don't give up.
And then you will prove. It's just as if you were in a swamp believing that 2 plus 2 is 5. Who said that? Who made it? I don't know. Nobody. It's the darkness. And when you put the light, the darkness goes. So, in the lesson, it says that I, even I, am the Lord, and beside me there is no Savior. And in the blue book on page 226, I was so happy this week. Every time I'd read something in the lesson, I'd turn to the blue book and there was some further explanation of it. So anyway, in the blue book on 226, Mrs. Eddy says, declare continually your own perfection and freedom, and let the true and divine idea destroy the mesmerism that argues that you were sad and unhappy, or I will add, sick, in a struggling situation. And then she says, this idea is your savior. Isn't that perfect? Declare the truth for yourself continually for your own perfection and freedom. And let the true idea, a divine idea, destroy the mesmerism that's arguing to you. So let the true idea that 2 plus 2 equals 4, declare for it, it will destroy the mesmerism that says it's 5. And then you'll prove that it was nothing in the first place. And you will prove the truth of Mrs. Eddy's words when you ask the question, why are we in this horrible state? Who says we are? Who's telling you that?
I am.
Well, Tom says he's telling us. It's better than to listen to Tom.
That is why we can trust absolutely nothing that the material senses tell us. Absolutely nothing. The senses tell you you're sick. It's a damn lie. The material senses tell you you're tired, worn out. It's a lie. When the material senses tell you you can't see anymore or hear anymore, it's a lie.
So, Ted, tell them you're healing.
It's a little healing, but it was nice. About 3 weeks ago, I was trying to clean my ears, and I applied too much power, and I think I penetrated the ear because I became instantly deaf on the right side, and the blood came out, and it was painful, and it was scary. Well, I prayed about it and went on my business, put some tap it up with some cotton wool, and next morning it was the same. So I lost hearing completely on my right side, and that tiny little voice in me started telling me that you will be fine, you can live without 1 year, you still have the second one, so it's okay. But I didn't listen to that voice and give it one more treatment, and again on the day number two went to bed to wake up the third day with the same situation. It was disturbing and scary, because it's a different world when you can hear one side, which I never been to. And on the third day, about up to 9-ish, between 9 and 10-ish, all of a sudden I hear this sound like pop, and it's open, and I regain full hearing on the right side. And I said, okay, that's nice. Maybe it happened naturally by itself. It just grow back together or whatever. So I went on my day, and then the end of the day I decided, yeah, well, let's clean all that refuse, because this was dripping blood and some kind of liquid, right? And then filled the whole ear with that stuff. So in the end of the day, I went to the bathroom and decided to clean it. I took again the cotton wool thing and inserted it, and to find out it's completely clean. There's nothing in it. Zero. And that's when I realized that healing just happened in the morning.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Healing power of the Christ. Good. And that healing power is with us now today, still working as it was in the time of Christ Jesus. And it's wonderful. Not faith cure, but we're understanding more and more of the truth, which is quite different from faith cure, which just is a belief.
Which is human will, really. It's believing, enough people believing it or believing it strongly enough that it manifests, but if it's human. I was intrigued in the lesson on Luke, fourth citation of the Bible, where Jesus was teaching, and then all these Pharisees and doctors of the law came in to where he was teaching. But in other words, the ultimate of the human mind came in to where he was teaching. But it says, and the power of the Lord was present to heal them. Here he was, but the power of the Lord was present to heal them. I thought, what was the power of the Lord? What brought the power of the Lord? What? Well, it just means that Jesus was so in the truth that nothing but the power of God could be present, even with all of his human mind in the room. Jesus was not impressed.
And that Christ's power vanquished it. I have that underlined in my lesson, too. I just thought that was beautiful. What a thing to think of. Do you ever think of that the power of the Lord is present to heal you? It always is.
And if you take that power with you wherever you go, it will heal every situation you could ever be. And that's a promise.
That is a promise. God's promises are kept, as our hymn says. And I love what Florence wrote, too, on the forum. Are his words holy to me? What a thought. Are God's words holy to you? Just that one sentence. Ask yourself. We talked about yesterday, the pure in heart will see God. His words will be holy to you. Be holy, and they'll be healing. All right, we're going to end in the blue book today since I was so in love with it all week. It's on page 216. I'll have Gary read.
We each dwell in our own world of consciousness. We look out through the windows of this consciousness and behold the passing procession of mortal mind. Day after day, we have been lured forth, have been pressed into the world, lost our individual peace and poise in divine mind, and found ourselves dragged through the uncleanness, the pain of the procession. We seek to regain our own home of consciousness, wiser for the experience, thinking we will not again become part of error's pageant. But here, let the newer understanding of love guard well your door. Stay in your own home of demonstration. Keep your peace, for idle curiosity, criticism, or even false sympathy may lure you forth. Wherein lies the wisdom of the serpent? To hide itself. Therefore, hide yourself in the understanding of Christian Science, be it great or small. We have all in some way needed the experience we have had. Never be found as a Christian Scientist mourning over an experience. It is a thing of the past, but not so the manifold power and presence of God resulting therefrom.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining our roundtable, and we will go forward now to a powerful service that is going out to meet the need.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.